Wonderful weekend, and my sister Mary Sue and my brother-in-law, Dr. John Scott, who is a retired dentist from Tyler, and my brother was here, but he had to go back early, and Mary Sue's last name is Scott, and my older sister, Lucretia, married a Jack Scott. Jack and John are not related, it's just that our family seems to like the name Scott. Duncan asked me if I had memorized all the accomplishments of Jack Scott. I said, I think so. I lived through most of them as he accomplished one successful career after another. We have a lot of visitors with us who maybe didn't get my email. Jack married my older sister, Lucretia, who has since passed away, and they've had a remarkable life together. It's unusual for a person's greatest fan to be a brother-in-law, but I am Jack Scott's favorite fan. I have admired him so much in the years that I've known him. He started out as a Bible major at Abilene Christian College, where he met Lucretia, my sister, and they got married. They did local work, and then Jack decided he wanted to do mission work, and they went to New Haven, Connecticut, built a church building there, and established the church well in New Haven. And while he was there, he got a degree from Yale University Divinity School, and he decided then to teach, and he went to Pepperdine University and was a Bible professor. And then he became an administrator, he became the provost of the Pepperdine campus. And then he decided to go into secular education and became president of two or more of the community colleges in California. The last was the Pasadena City College in Pasadena, California. When he retired as president there, a group of citizens decided that he ought to go into politics, which was quite a change from what he had done before. And Jack finally agreed to do that and served two terms in the Assembly of California, and then he served three terms in the California State Senate. He was finally termed out. When he was finally termed out and could not run again, the governor of California, Schwarzenegger at that time, saw his great ability and asked him to become chancellor of all the community colleges of California. There's over 120 of those colleges. So for 4 years after he retired from the Senate, he administered that program. Because of his background in education, when he was in the legislature of California, he was placed in charge of the educational programs and development and oversaw budgets of over $1 billion a year. And so there again, he was very successful. He finally retired from public life, and he decided to volunteer, and he volunteers to help the indigent in Pasadena as a counselor twice a week. But what impresses me more than anything else about Jack Scott is that he has been a preacher for a church in Los Angeles area for more than 50 years. And in all of his successes in life, he never lost touch with that church and would preach there on Sundays. And that means more to me than anything else. He's never forgotten the Lord. And it's my pleasure for you to listen to my brother-in-law, Jack Scott.
Good morning. I guess I can skip my funeral because that's about as good a eulogy as I'm going to get. I really do thank Alan for those kind words. And I have a lot of admiration for the great work that Alan and Mikey have done here at the Broadway Church. He served 48 years. Now, I don't know of any other minister that normally has held a job that long. And so he spoke of his admiration for me, but I certainly have a lot of admiration for both of them. And I visited here a lot. Over 40 years ago, I'm sure, was the first time I came here. But Lacreda and I always enjoyed our visits with Alan and Mikey. And so anyway, I'm pleased to be here and share with you a message this morning. I'd like to begin by turning over to the book of Matthew, an incident in the life of Jesus. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, "Teacher, what is the great commandment in the law?" Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. But," he said, "and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Of these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." It's interesting that Jesus chose to sum up one's responsibility to God with those two commandments. Now, time won't permit for me to preach a sermon on each one of the commandments, so I've chosen to specialize on the sermon of love your neighbor as yourself, because I need to examine that and see exactly what are the ramifications when you are all, asked to do that. In fact, once Paul, writing in Galatians, simply said, I can say it in one word, love your neighbor as yourself. And it's a very powerful commandment, but it may be rather difficult to fulfill when you examine all the possibilities involved in that. There's no question that if we look to Jesus as our example, he certainly had tremendous love for the people around him. And they didn't have to be the high and mighty. Very frequently, Jesus was involved in ministering to the poor, to the leper, to the outcast. In fact, once he pictured the judgment scene in the 25th chapter of Matthew, and he was pointing to those on the right and the left, and to those on the right, he said, "When I was hungry, you gave me to eat. When I was thirsty, you gave me to drink. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was sick and in prison, you visited me." And they say to Jesus, when did we do these things? And Jesus said this, "As much as you did it to the least of these, you've done it unto me." So, obviously, we're dealing with one of the prime commandments in the entire Bible when we talk about loving your neighbor as yourself. One time there was, and by the way, Jesus mentioned this passage, love your neighbor as yourself, four or five times in the gospel. So, let's explore that a little bit more. He was once again tested. Jesus showed himself to be very adept at answering the questions in which people were trying to put him on the spot, and he generally was able to put the audience on the spot. So there was an occasion when he said these words, and some lawyer said, "Well, who is my neighbor?" you can automatically realize that he was trying to draw boundaries around his neighbor. And as Jesus was apt to do, he began to telling a parable, a story, not just a direct answer, but something that vividly illustrated it. And that's the parable of the Good Samaritan, one of the most loved parables in the entire Bible. Well, the story goes like this. There was a man going on the way from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he was suddenly assaulted by bandits, and they beat him, and they stripped him, relieved him of what wealth he had, and left him, and it says, for half dead. Well, there was a priest that went by, but he didn't stop to do anything. A Levi went by, and the same thing, and suddenly there came along a Samaritan. Now, the fact that Jesus made a Samaritan the hero of the story, keep in mind that the Jews did not have a good opinion of Samaritans. They considered them half-breed Jews and often would go out of their way to avoid ever traveling through the Samaritan section of Israel. So as he did, he stopped. He poured in oil and wine to the man's wounds. He put him on his beast of burden, which in that day was probably a donkey. And he took him to an inn. And he said that he put money down to help this person. And he said, you know, if after you minister to him, if it costs more money when I return, I'll pay you that amount as well. And then Jesus asked the question, who was the neighbor? And of course, finally, the lawyer had to admit that it was this Samaritan. And Jesus said, well, go and do likewise. A very powerful story, one. And when I stopped to think a little bit about how Jesus was, he got a lot of criticism because they say, you deal with sinners, or you deal with lepers, or, you know. And Jesus said, well, you know, it is the sick that a physician goes to. But of course, Jesus was setting an example. And it wasn't merely to demonstrate that he was the Son of God. That was true. But so many times when Jesus saw someone who was blind or someone who was, needing physical help, it says Jesus looked on that person and was compassionate. So he was moved by the plight of these individuals whom he needed to do what he could. One time Jesus was in a Pharisee's house, and you may remember this story. Jesus had been invited, and Jesus, of course, would be willing to go with the rich as well as the poor, the mighty as well as those that were least. And suddenly a woman burst in, and she began to praise Jesus, anoint his head with oil, and even with tears washed his feet. And some of them looking on said, well, you know, Jesus knew what kind of woman that was. He would have nothing to do with her. Evidently, Jesus had something to do with healing her of her sin as well. And so Jesus said, you know, Simon, you didn't wash my feet when I came in. And this woman has cared for me. And so with Jesus, he was willing to, he didn't write this woman off when he said, well, you know, I can't deal with her because she's a sinner. And so that's really the power of Jesus, the story he told. That talks to you and me about our life to be, to love our neighbor as ourselves. Now, I'm assuming all of us love ourselves pretty well. We pay a lot of attention to the needs of our own personal body and mind and everything else. And yet that very powerful indictment comes to us, love your neighbor as yourself. We come from the Churches of Christ, a movement that was begun in the early 19th century to say the way for unity is to go back to the first century, is to be simply what the early Christians were like. And that's a great movement to do that, and so with a lot of zeal. But sometime in our zeal for the correct doctrine, we may not have emphasized sufficiently the correct spirit. Because I'm very impressed when I read about those early Christians and the kind of emphasis they placed. Listen to this in the second chapter of Acts, right after these people were baptized. It says 3,000 were baptized. Then it talks about the early church. And so it says, "Now all who believed were together and had all things in common, and sold their possessions and goods, and divided them among all as anyone had need. So continuing daily with one accord in the temple, breaking bread from house to house, they ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people." I think the early church was powerful and had favor with all the people by not only what they said, but also by the way they lived, by the fact that they were so loving, that they saw people who were in need and ministered to them. When I say that sometimes we have forgotten the spirit, I'm not saying that certainly of the fact that there aren't members of our church who have done some wonderful things. I think of Henry Farrar, Dr. Henry Farrar. He went as a missionary with his wife to the country of Nigeria. And pretty soon he realized that what those people really needed was physical help. So he started a clinic that has grown and now is in 5 different African nations. Thousands of people have been served in those hospitals. But I'm sure that also many, many people have been converted as a result of that. Because once you show love to people, once you are caring for people, and imagine in a country where obviously the medical care is not on par with the United States of America, but they knew that these people loved and cared for them. While I was here, I was talking to my sister-in-law, Mary Sue Scott, and she told me a story about the Shiloh Church. She said, "We have a program there for unwed mothers." Now, you know, a lot of people, the first thing they're going to do is to shame an unwed mother and say, "You got yourself in a mess," and so forth. But suppose, like this church is doing, caring for these unwed mothers. And Mary Sue went on to explain to me that as a result, quite a number of these young women were baptized. And in some cases, they were able to be united with this man who had been the father of these children that were born. So we can do things like that. We can look about, we can care, and we can show that we are loved. In fact, John in 1 John wrote and said, if you don't love the people that you run into, these are children of God, then how can you say you love God? You know, most of us kind of like for people to love our children. And all of a sudden it says that all of us are children of God. There's a very powerful lesson in the book of Acts where Peter was being led by the Spirit. And he went down, and at first the early church was composed strictly of Jews. And then slowly they began to realize that they had to reach out and touch the people who were not Jews. And Cornelius was a God-fearing man, but he was a Gentile. And it took a vision for Peter to realize that we need to preach the gospel to the Gentiles. And he then said, God is no respecter of persons. And Paul writes, in Jesus Christ, there is neither Jew nor Greek, male nor female, and slave or free. Now, I'm sure that if he wrote today, he would include some other differences that exist among us. But he was saying, God is no respecter of persons. And of course, Paul was the one that really was most instrumental in realizing that Jewish Christians, that we should be reaching out to those that are not Jews. And if we follow, if we're a real neighbor, we follow that same rule. In Jesus Christ, there's no racial discrimination. In Jesus Christ, there's no difference in ethnicity. It doesn't matter whether a person happens to be living in China or Africa or in the United States. The whole point is that to mistreat or to view people as less than human, or to think of them as, well, I don't have any responsibility because this person isn't an American. And so we must recognize that racial discrimination is just wrong, that's all. That's simply saying that in some way or another you're more worthy than that person simply based on the person's race or nationality or maybe their status. Maybe James wrote his letter once and made it very clear that if you go around and simply let the rich have the best seat and the poor man to say, well, go over there and sit in the corner, that's a violation. In fact, in James, another powerful passage is this one. Pure religion and undefiled before the God and Father is this: to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. In the first century, most widows were in a very terrible condition once their husband died, because they were totally dependent economically on their husbands. And so the early church, you remember in the Jerusalem church, they had a group of widows. And it speaks of the order of widows in the 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus. They realized that these women needed help. And so they reached out. And it said they found favor with the people. I think they found favor because the people saw they were a loving group. You can argue with people and make points, but you have to live the life. That's the way that you touch and convert people. You have to show by your love, by your kindness, by your involvement, by your care. And I'm preaching to myself as much as I'm preaching to you, because I know the need of that. When Alan mentioned the fact that Lucretia and I moved to New Haven, Connecticut, a mission church. Let me tell you the story of three women in that church. Their name was Lynette and Betty and Peggy. They were faithful. They were fine Christian women. But in all three cases, their husbands were not members of the church. And in some cases, you never saw them come through the church door. Well, but these women were faithful, kind, and so forth. Slowly, Helen mentioned that we built a building there. And Tom Lynette's husband got interested in that, and he came down and helped some as we were building the building. And then when we finished building the building, he and his wife gave us the $50,000 loan that was a mortgage on the building. I'd gone out and raised the money where we could buy the land, but we needed to seek a loan. So, and that building, by the way, stands today. So Tom was baptized, and then eventually John was baptized, and then Betty's husband, Bob, was baptized. I think it was not so much what those women said, but how they lived, how they were an example of kindness. And finally, those men saw something different in their wives, and so they made the decision to be baptized and to be a member of the church. So that's just how powerful we can be by our words. And I one thing that distresses me, for instance, we have an immigration problem in America, and I don't want to get into the politics, but I do know this. These people are the children of God. These are not people that are described as by some as murderers and rapists. They're generally people that aren't able to earn a living, and they're really interested in doing that, and most of them work hard. It's not like they have a higher crime rate than the average person in America. Did you know in the Old Testament, God said to Israel, you should love the stranger because you once were strangers in the land of Egypt. In other words, you once were immigrants. You once were people who were, you know, and if we stop and think about it, unless you're a Native American, we're all descendants of immigrants. I happen to have come from mostly the British Isles and Ireland, but we might be came from Germany, Africa, a lot of places. So all I'm saying is we should reach out to people, regardless of their background. And sometimes it's really interesting. I'll tell you a little story about one of my daughters. Her name is Amy. Amy is a person that's a dedicated Christian. She had three sons. They're all male, and they grew up. And suddenly she was touched by the plight of the orphans in Ethiopia. So she and her husband, Paul, traveled to Ethiopia, went to this orphanage, and they found a 12-year-old girl whose both parents had died, and they decided to adopt her. Well, she couldn't speak English, but they took her home and cared for her, and she became part of that family. And eventually, Alame, that's her name, she began to learn English. She finished high school. She's 24 years of age now, is a dedicated Christian, holding a good job. And only because I saw what my daughter did in caring for someone who needed care. There are a lot, even as in the first century, they had the lepers, the blind, and so forth. They had beggars, as often is true. But we have lots of interesting people in our lives. And some of them, they may be homeless. And there may be individuals that in some way or another are in need. So that's the way Jesus defined our neighbors. He didn't say, well, it's the person who lives next door, or it's members of your family. Now, that's not to, many times individuals have done such wonderful things. I think of some grandmothers. Once in a while, I've run into preachers, and you know what story they say? This is not the normal case, but they'll say something like this. Well, I grew up, my parents didn't go to church, but I had a grandmother who would come by on Sundays and take me as a little boy to church. And what a change in life. That loving grandmother made the difference in those persons' lives. Well, let's just be as practical as possible. Number one, I'm not suggesting that you're going to be a missionary in Nigeria or go to some foreign country. I like it was a children's hymn often sung in Vacation Bible School, but it said this simple sentence, brighten the corner where you are. That's what God's calling you to do. Where you work, who your friends are, who maybe suddenly somebody in need. And so I think that we can do that by developing a spirit, like the fruits of the Spirit Paul talks about, you know, joy, love, no envy, etc. He talked about love in the 1 Corinthians 13. And you know, if you read the Beatitudes of Jesus, he spent a long time talking about our attitudes. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Changing people's mind, and if we have a mind of love and gentleness and kindness, we'll reach out and recognize that, you know, it's so important the way you live your life. And just keep thinking about that phrase, love your neighbor as yourself. It's a simple phrase, but a powerful impact it can have on our lives. And whether one of the things Jesus taught also in the Sermon on the Mount was be a reconciler. He said, actually, if you've offered your gift on the altar and you know that your brother has something against you, he said, leave the gift there and go back to your brother and be reconciled. Be a peacemaker. Be a person that's known for your love and your gentleness and your kindness. And maybe even volunteer on some calls. Alan didn't mention that, and so I will explain it. About 5 years ago, I'd always had an admiration for the Salvation Army because they really did care about the outcast and everything. And I'd given them a small contribution at the end of the year. But I thought to myself one day, I said, you know, time is pretty important. So I went down to the Salvation Army and I said, I'd like to volunteer. I didn't know whether they'd put me behind the table to dish out food or what. But the fella happened to know of me, who was a member of the staff, and he said, I want to take you to the major. That's the guy who ran this operation. And they said to me, would you be willing to be a part-time counselor for those who are addicted or who are trying to heal themselves, addicted to either drugs or alcohol? It was a six-month program for men. They provide them food and lodging, although they call on them to do work. But they also say, along with the program, they also say, you can't, if you come in here, and either if you take up alcohol or drugs, then you're out. You've got to abstain. And so I began just talking to two men on Tuesdays and Thursday afternoon, and it was amazing to hear those stories. And the interesting thing is that many of them came, and when you decided to talk about religion, many of them realized they needed God. Some of them had already started reading their Bibles and praying to God, and they realized the fortunate thing, it wasn't like stopping somebody on the street who was an alcoholic and try to talk him out of changing his behavior. Those men had come because they needed help and they realized it. And it was, so I have the opportunity to talk to them about the fact God forgives them, but, and God loves them, but God also expects them to change. And how much better their life's going to be. By the way, I don't have to convince them that they've often lost families or, you know, lost jobs and everything. And so it's pretty easy for them. They're looking for a solution. So you might volunteer somewhere. I'm sure this church needs volunteers who do a whole lot of things. But also just that you... But I'm just saying it's an opportunity. I want to conclude with a quote from someone that I learned about in church history by the name of Francis. He's called Francis of Assisi. He was a young man who, you know, like all young men, he was, you know, living the life, easy life, carousing around some. And then one day, something about Jesus changed his life. And he decided that he would begin to care for the poor and be with the lepers and took a vow of poverty and so forth. Here's a quote that I think sums up what I'm trying to say this morning. He said, "Preach the gospel at all times. If necessary, use words. The most powerful thing you can do is to live the life our caring, loving, kindness, forgiveness, all those traits that you find. And you might be surprised that person might then be wanting to listen to you a little bit because you have prepared the way and shown that you cared about the person. May God help us as we live our lives, and indeed may we love our neighbor as ourselves.
Days are filled with sorrow and care. Hearts are lonely and drear. Burdens are lifted at Calvary. Jesus is very near. Burdens are lifted at Calvary. Jesus is very near. Troubled soul, the Savior can see every heartache and tear. Burdens are lifted at Calvary. Jesus is very near. Burdens are lifted at Calvary. Calvary, Calvary. Burdens are lifted at Calvary. Jesus is very near.